Everyone online can hear just fine, and we'll go from there. So you do have members Adams, Essex, and Selberg present online, and then here in the room are members Power, Wheatley, and Ralston. So you have a full committee, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started, guys. Call the meeting to order for the Education Committee. And we'll start off with the, is there any public comment? I didn't look back there to see if they had a signature on there. There is it. Okay. We'll go on to the old business. Old business is going to pertain to the KAR 109-17-1 revisions. Joe?
Yeah, thank you. And so I do want to note the agenda does state that this was for information only. This is actually being switched over to needing your guys' direction as to how to proceed. So at 3 o'clock, shortly after 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, the Attorney General's office called us with their review. So that second stamp process that's mentioned in the agenda was completed. They came back with a recommendation on language that needs to be included within the field internship training component of it. So this is in it's on page 2, subsection D, which currently the proposed version says each instructor of field internship training being conducted with a pre-hospital emergency medical service shall be an EMS provider at or above the level of training being conducted. The Attorney General's office came back and stated that we need to include the list of five as KSA 65-6129A states to allow for supervision. Because the statute is very clear that it shall be supervised by that, they felt as though the regulation needs to also address those components. So the recommendation from them, and again, what we put in language, it was sent out to the committee members. We will get this out if that's what you'd like. We'll post it on under our regulations and revision after this. Will ultimately read, shall be a licensed physician, a licensed physician assistant, a licensed advanced practice registered nurse, a licensed respiratory therapist, or a certified EMS provider, and have experience as an EMS provider at or above the level of training being conducted. They felt that that met the requirement listed in the statute and was... They were not necessarily in favor of signing off on it without that present. So the question that I have for the committee is there need to be or is there any concern from the committee as to whether there should be a minimum time frame of experience that should be required in order to be an instructor for that field internship side of it? But happy to answer any questions.
Joe, what process does this have to happen with that added language at the bottom? Does it go back to the beginning, or does they just approve it and we move on?
No, great question, Mr. Chair. And what it ultimately goes back to the Department of Administration for them to just ensure that we follow the English side of it well, and then after stamped, goes back to the AG's office for their review.
Okay. I don't know, you know, that's a good question on the requirement of number of years and stuff, but where do you start? You know, some of the kids coming out of school, that first year, they're the sharpest they're ever going to be.
Exactly.
And they're very good with other students because they just were a student, and they appreciate them, and they treat them well, and they learn a lot. And some of the ones that's been there 30 years with a lot of field experience, they're kind of like, okay, yeah, just, you know, it's more of a laid-back approach. And I just don't know. I think that's more of a specific thing for the schools that are providing these educational classes to regulate that how they want based off their outcomes of the – because the preceptors are always evaluated by the students too, and they get that feedback to know that that's happening. So – I just don't, you know, I know that we need to be kind of watching that, but I think if we put it in this reg, we're gonna have problems with it. I think we're gonna eliminate some of the people that would be excellent to do it by limiting that by a year. But that's my personal opinion.
I think it should be left up to the agency. Because there are some who are strong preceptors and there are some that are not strong preceptors, and so I think most agencies would not want a student with someone. I think the agency should be given the leeway to determine who they want to precept students. I don't think there should be a, just my opinion. So.
Yep, go ahead, David.
Hey, yeah, this is David Adams, and I concur with the other two. Should leave this up to the departments to make that decision.
Thank you. Joe, can you hear me okay?
Yep, all go right. Ahead, Dr. Sauber.
Hi. So, just a wording question. You know, the way this looks, the way it's worded, experience in the last sentence, experience in EMS. So if you have a pulmonologist come into your class, such as lecturing on respiratory physiology, he's certainly qualified in the other components, but may not have great knowledge in EMS. Does that mean that kind of instructor would be disallowed, or am I overreading that?
So the additional language deals solely with field internship training, and so that requirement to have experience as an EMS provider would only be applicable to those instructing field internship.
There you go. Okay, thanks.
Okay, it sounds like the consensus is, I don't think we need to change how that's worded on the consensus that we're getting. So did anybody online or present have any issues with just going ahead? And I mean, AG's kind of set their heels in and said we need to add that. So we kind of have to, it's not changing anything with the document because we perceived that based off the statute. So
I have no concerns.
Okay, just a second.
Okay.
Okay, we got a comment here. Go ahead.
Yeah, Chris Cannon, KMSA Educator Society. We fully support moving it forward as quickly as possible.
Okay. So what do you need us as a committee to do to move that forward, Joe?
That sure sounded like consensus to me.
Okay, so just need consensus. We don't need to make a motion to move it forward.
No. Okay. Consensus works.
Okay. Any other issues or concerns on the KOR 109-17-1? If not, we're going to move on to the new business related to the CE and testing pathway that Joe wanted to present.
All right, so this business item is really just to start a discussion and to see if this is something that you would like me to continue to proceed with devoting resources to looking further into or not. And so it's really just a litmus test to see what the desire is of the committee at this point. So currently there are two pathways of renewing your EMS certification in the state of Kansas as completion of CE. And then the second pathway is passing a board-approved cognitive assessment and having a signature or sign-off on skills. So those are the two pathways that currently exist. One of the discussions that we've had a long time, and I say a very long time, it's been over 8 years now, we've talked about how hours may not equal competency on going through and what components there truly are. So what we're looking at would be a possibility and whether this would exist as an alternative pathway or as an additional pathway. So in keep the two that are already there, but to look at this being as kind of a third way of stating perhaps you can test out on objectives that are specific to those topic areas that we're requiring CE within. And if testing out, you show that you've met all of those competencies, that qualifies as having met the knowledge thing, whether that's just simply a test out or if it's identified that you don't meet that objective, having some sort of training specific to ensure that that objective is met, and then reassessing to ensure that that's done. The second component of that is on the skills side of things, and the fact that folks have asked fairly repeatedly that skill proficiency in the field somehow be translated across to verifying that they still know the skills or can do the skills. So if I'm 17 of 20 on IV starts in a two-year period, I probably have the skill fairly accurately done, you know, an 85% success rate, and that should be count as verification rather than coming in to go through some sort of a process in that. But being able to utilize what we have within our patient care reporting platform of skills that are being performed and whether they're successful or not successful, and counting that again towards that continuing education side of things. So there are resources out there that would exist there that could exist that could help monitor this process and go through. But really, we were wanting to just have the discussion to see if there's even an appetite to consider something like this in going through. There's lots of steps, but this is, I mean, we're in our thinking about having a family kind of thing phase of the child. So,
any comments on it? I think it's a big undertaking. What resources are you referring to, Joe? Is it a resource that the state would provide this as a resource to anybody that applied, or what? How would you foresee that? I know people would utilize it for if they chose to do that pathway with their continuing education, but who would be providing the service?
Sure. So I can tell you it can't be developed internally within our office, so I would anticipate that this would be something we look to contract out to do. There's a system that would track a majority of this that we know of. I'm sure there's more than one. So, I mean, ultimately, I'm thinking a state-level resource available to all of our licensees, and then those that choose to head down that path. Okay.
Would you picture it being able to be piecemeal to where, like you mentioned, IV techniques not based off of the assessment of the records and that is not up to par, advising, hey, go do that and let's see if we can improve those skills? And can they just do that one and not do all or none under that? Would you picture that being a possibility? You know, because when you get into skills, it's almost an all or none theory type thing.
And I think that's part of the discussion to have it as this progresses out is that what you would have that look like. In my mind, what I'm looking at is a skills portfolio. There are certain skills that you say these are things that they need to be proficient in on how to do, or they need to be competent on how to do. And then if they've, let's say innovation was one for me as a paramedic. Mm-hmm. So if I haven't met whatever the threshold of number of innovations you feel were necessary to determine competency, whatever that number is, mm-hmm. Then, you know, maybe it requires a skills verification be done that it's not that I have to go out and perform five of these. Maybe it is just the fact that I'm with a medical director or with an instructor or somebody that can sign off on that skill being done. Okay. I don't know how that would look. It's really up to, again, how you decide that you want that to look.
Okay. How much is this going to be overwhelming to your staff to get this pushed through? I know that that's, with the numbers we have, mm-hmm. Do you have the staff that would be able to go ahead and research this a little bit more? Because that's what you're asking, to see if we need to move forward and research this and see if something we want to do.
But those are the resources I was talking about on what needs to be devoted. It is going to be a fairly significant undertaking. Mm-hmm. And so I just need to know if that's what I need to direct staff to do. So would it add to our workload? Of course. Mm-hmm. Any type of research does. Do I think it's impossible to fit in? No, absolutely not. I think it's very easy to fit this in within our existing workload.
Okay. So what do you think we ought to advise Joe? Any input?
And it's just another pathway. It's not mandatory that everyone would have to do that.
It's not mandatory at all.
Correct. Okay.
I see, coming from a small rural environment where there's limited opportunities versus the city where there's a lot of opportunities, there's kind of a discrepancy here. I just think it's a good idea, but we probably don't do enough in a small service to justify getting approved that way, unless it's a percentage. If we are successful on 8 out of 10, and 10 is all we got, then that's successful. But if it needs to be 30 or 40, we're not going to see that many.
Yeah, and I would agree. Volume is going to play fairly heavily into this if there are volumes that are set as thresholds versus just the fact that maybe they did one successfully because they encountered one during that 2-year period.
And I think that's fair to say. It's not just small that run into that. I mean, field delivery of kids. I mean, you know, that seems to be, you know, kind of slim on some. Now you get a few, but if you got 10 people working for you, and it happened on one shift, all 10 or 3 times you had it, then you only had 2 people that were experienced with it. So that's always a concern. And a lot of times with the education, you focus that on your continuing education and not necessarily the things that we're weak on. It's the things we didn't experience. And I think this would give them a pathway to be able to do that. You know, and the changing of the environment is really big across the nation, with a lot of EMS certified people not even working in the EMS industry. So this gives them a pathway to be able to do it and not be affiliated with a service, because that's the way most of them are working. They would have that pathway to where they could do it outside of that.
Mr. Chair, this is David Adams.
Go ahead, David.
I like this idea, and I would encourage the board to or the committee to let Joe move forward and investigate this, research this.
I absolutely agree.
I like the concept.
I think we've got a consensus.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I just want to make sure that you all heard me. I heard someone say my name again, but I think proficiency in the field, of course, that's streamlining is always good and other options always good. I love this idea.
Okay.
All right. Marching orders received.
I'd say let's look forward. Let's work forward towards looking at this a little bit deeper.
Okay.
I think it'd be worth the work. Okay. Any further discussion on it? I think we're going to have Joe move forward on that, and based off the consensus, and that is the last agenda item other than parking lot.
I do have just...
Oh, Joe's got something. Go ahead,
and it's
Joe.
More of an announcement at this point. So in reviewing our BLS exams, we have noted that, and we knew this from the very beginning, we've been monitoring it's just really started to come up a little more frequently as of recent. We do have 10 spots per station that we allow to test. So if you have a two-station site, you have 20 slots going through. We are starting to pretty significantly see examiner fatigue or exam facilitator fatigues, patient fatigue, and assistant fatigue beginning with about the seventh time slot that's encountered, to the point at which, I mean, the patient may not necessarily be presenting as well as what they were within the first five or six. And that was to be expected. We knew that from the beginning, is that fatigue was going to be an issue, and we were monitoring it from the very beginning. I just want to put that out to the committee's attention. Also, we're going to be reaching out to the sponsoring organizations that have been providing the test to hear, listen to their feedback as well on this, to see if we need to potentially drop that number of 10 down. Because what we are also seeing is that when the patient acts like the patient should be acting, given the condition that the scenario is covering, the students have a tendency to perform better and more accurately according to the condition that they're seeing, which makes sense. I mean, that's what they're trained to do. So we've got this kind of little bit of a concern maybe brewing on side of things, but just wanted to let you be aware, we are going to start asking questions about specifically that 7 to 10 range, and if there's any things that our organizations could do to help potentially mitigate that, whether that's a break after 5 that consists of at least a time slot going through, which, yes, makes a day longer, which none of us like, but if it resets that testing team, that's probably the right thing to do. Or, anyways, other strategies that are out there, we're just going to be seeking input to try to figure that out, but wanted to put that on your guys' radar.
And what you're referring to is, like, you're going to test 10 sessions in that one room, and it's the same people that are providing that testing.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say 10 stations would be.
You might do that in 10 different.
That's a busy day.
That's a busy day.
Yeah.
Okay, if we don't have anything more before the board, I'd say we could probably entertain a motion.
Make a motion.
Okay, got a motion to adjourn. Second?
Second.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Thanks for calling in, all of you.
Yeah, thanks all. Well done, John.